Okay, so halacha day on Perek Mem Hei. So again, it wasn't so easy to find something, but there is a pretty significant Rashi that actually discusses several halachic concepts that are somewhat esoteric. People might not think about them too often, but they are mentioned in this Rashi here, and they do have halachic ramifications. So we'll learn a few about those issues. So Perek Mem Hei Pasuk Chaf Dalet. So Yosef is getting ready to send his brothers back. And it says, Vayishalach Esecha Vayilechu, that he sent his brothers and they went. Vayomer Alihem, and he said to them, Al Tirguzu Badarach. Don't, and Tirguzu is a bit of a question what that word means. Art Scroll translates it as, do not become agitated on the way. Al Tirguzu Badarach. So what does it mean, Al Tirguzu Badarach? So Rashi comments a few different possibilities. Number one, don't become too involved in learning, because you'll become agitated on the way from having these discussions and learning. That's opinion A. Opinion two, don't take such big steps, and you should come during daylight into the city. Both of those are different issues, as we're going to see. And he says, the simple explanation that is not the halachic explanation, but the simple explanation is, Rashi explains that Yosef was telling them, don't get into fights on the way, start pointing fingers at one another about whose fault it is that the I was sold and all those kinds of things. Okay, but I would like to focus on the first two reasons that Rashi gives. Both of those are quoted from the same Gemara in Maseches Tainis. Maseches Tainis Hadaf Yud Amud Beis discusses a few things, other halachos that are learned out from here. You may recall a few weeks ago when Yaakov sends the brothers down for the first time. So he said to them, "Vayomer Yaakov Levanav, Lama Tiru? Why do you seem to be conspicuous?" And the Gemara commented that the brothers actually had food, that Yaakov and his sons had enough food in order to survive, but yet Yaakov anyways told them to go down because it's inappropriate that everybody else is starving and you guys have enough food to eat. So during a time of famine, one is not supposed to look conspicuous. So that halacha is learned out on the Gemara Daf Yud Amud Beis. The Gemara then takes a break and then goes back to that sugya. Why it goes and takes a break, maybe we'll get to it at the end. But the Gemara then goes and says, Darshan Zis Pascal, Tirguzu Badarach, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Lehem Yosef La'achiv, Yosef is telling his brothers, Al Tisas B'davar Halacha, don't engage in halachic matters, Shematirguzu Aleichem Adarach, because perhaps you're going to become agitated along the way. What does it mean that you're going to become agitated along the way? So Rashi comments on the page here that you're going to, like, tattoo. You're going to make a mistake. That while you're driving, you're driving along, and you're going to get involved in halacha, you're going to ignore the GPS, you can ignore the Waze voice, and you're going to make a wrong turn, and now you're going to be in trouble, it's going to take you much longer, so therefore, and you're going to become agitated. So in order to avoid that, you shouldn't get too involved in halacha. That's the same thing that Rashi said, right? We're good so far, right? Don't get involved in halacha discussions. Right, Rashi's quoted from this Gemara. However, the Gemara then continues and quotes and says the following halacha. He says, "Eini, really, are you sure?" V'ham Rabbi Eli Bar Barachia, Shnei Tamid Chacham Shemahalchem Baderech, that there are two Tamid Chacham that are going on the road. The Ein Bineim Divrei Torah, they don't speak Torah between them. Ruuyin Li Sarif, they deserve to be burned. Right, they're going to be in trouble if two Tamid Chacham are on the road and don't speak in learning. So how do we know that? Shneamar, because it tells the story by Eliyahu and Elisha, that before Eliyahu is taken up to Shemayim, before the chariot arrives, so Eliyahu and Elisha were walking together. And the Pasuk says, Vayihema holchem haluch v'daber, they were walking, they were speaking as they walked, v'nei rechav eish v'susi eish, at a fire... And a fiery chariot and fiery horses appeared by Afridu Bein Shneim and separated between the two of them. Gemara says time at the Yigadibur. So the reason that it only split between them is because they were talking and learning. Halika Dibur, but if there wasn't Dibur, Ruyin Lisarim. Then they deserve to be burnt. Right? So you have the Pasuk actually says they were walking and they were speaking to one another. And the Gemara makes an assumption. Well, obviously they were speaking and learning. What else would they be speaking of? Right? That's kind of how do you know that Yaakov Avinu wore a hat? Plus it says Vayitzi Yaakov Be'er Shava, that Yaakov left Be'er Shava. You think Yaakov went anywhere without wearing his hat? Right? So the same thing here. You think Elisha and Eliyahu would be speaking together and not be talking and learning? So the only reason this chariot of fire went between them and didn't actually damage them is because they were speaking in they're speaking and learning. By the way, in that story of the two of them walking together, after Rav Soloveitchik passed away, year 1993, so Rav Soloveitchik passed away on Pesach. So there were Hespedim in Boston. I remember actually I was in seventh grade at the time, and my uncle was the rabbi in Springfield, Massachusetts. So I remember I stayed there actually for the last days of Yontif. My parents went back, but I was able to go to the Levaya of Rav Soloveitchik. So I remember sitting in the gym with Maimonides. I remember Rav Soloveitchik speaking. I don't really remember the time. I've gone back and found Rav Aaron's hesped for his brother. But 30 days later, they had a hesped for Rav Soloveitchik. They had a shloshim in NYU, right, which Rabbi Lamb gave his major hesped for the Rav, and he based it off of this pasuk. He describes that towards the end, if I were to have a last conversation with the Rav, right, and he talks about how he quotes this pasuk, and he says, I would rather be walking rather than sitting at a table. What's the difference between walking and sitting at a table? Because when you're walking side by side. You don't have to stare at each other. And he describes how if I had to stare at Rav Soloveitchik, I'd be so overcome with shame that we took him for granted and we didn't always take him seriously. And then he developed the whole hesped based on, at least the last part of this hesped was based on this pasuk. It's in Malachim. It's in the book of Malachim, where Eliyahu, the story of Eliyahu in Malachim, Malachim base. Okay. But if anybody that it's available, it was written up in tradition. If anybody wants to track it down, it's really really an amazing. I mean, the whole thing was an amazing testament. So, anyways, so the Gemara asks the question, right? The Gemara is dealing with the question. Yosef tells his brothers that they're not supposed to be speaking and learning, but yet we have this idea that Elisha and Eliyahu are walking, and they had to be speaking and learning, otherwise they would have been burnt up by this chariot. Implication being that if you're traveling together, you should be speaking and learning. So, how do you resolve that? So, the Gemara answers: Lo kasha, it's not a problem, right? How limigras, how unit, that one of them is talking about recitation, and the other one is talking about being ma'ayin. That one is permitted to talk and learning, or at least speak in a halachos back and forth, but in order to get, but one should avoid getting too much in depth. If you get too much in depth, so then you're going to be confused. So Eliyahu and Elisha were speaking. Yeah, they were speaking and learning. They weren't necessarily having an in-depth Ian conversation. They were speaking and learning. Yosef was warning his brothers not to avoid that. That's okay. That you can do. But to be ma'ayin in a sugya, to get your mind totally wrapped up in something, so then you're going to then things are going to get things are going to get difficult.
What line in the parsha is it?
What line in the parsha? It's Perek Mem Hei Pasuk Chaf Dalet. 24.
So you just said agitate. You didn't say. You're saying there's a discussion on what is the word agitate, right?
No, the discussion is what was he telling them not to do? Meaning you're not allowed to do something because you're going to become agitated.
Right. It doesn't say
explicitly. Rashi says learning, but the Gemara says, but there's another indication you're supposed to be learning. So how do you resolve that? One's talking about recitation, one's talking about learning in depth. The mugging of,
your argument is learning in depth is more argumentative.
More argumentative. It takes more thought. It's going to distract you more from the learning. There is a Magen Avraham on in Siman Kuf Yud in Shulchan Aruch, where it discusses a little bit about Tefillah Sederach, and the Magen Avraham there comments that's only if you're the driver, if you're the passenger, if that's only for the Bala Gala, the wagon driver. But if you're the guy in the back, so then you're allowed to speak and learning, even be, it's not really an issue. So it does come up if you're the driver and the other person starts talking Be'iyun. So I remember last year last year, the RCA convention happens to be right now, so I'm not doing this year. Last year I was there, so I have to give Rav Schachter a ride from the convention back to his house. And I remember asking him a question, and he starts rattling off the cars, and I'm trying to follow him. We almost got hit by a bus at some point, and I did miss a turn. Actually, we had Wei, so we missed a turn, but we were able to get back on track. but nothing fazed him. He was just talking, being the driver. So things are a little more of an issue. So one has to be careful about this. Okay. Anyway, so that's idea number one. However, so this is the promise was to do a little bit of Chazar Masechta Sukkah. So Masechta Sukkah has a similar Gemara where it makes that distinction between learning in general versus learning Be'iyun. Where is that found? So the Gemara tells us that one of the things that a person is supposed to do in a sukkah. What are the things he's supposed to do? So the Gemara says, Ketzad tahayilu kelim noy malabasukkah. If he has nice kelim, he should bring him to the sukkah. Matzos knows malabasukkah. If he has nice linens, he should bring him to the sukkah. Ochel v'shosu matayil basukkah. He eats and drinks and he should relax in the sukkah. Ooh, mishanin basukkah. What does mishanin mean? So mishanin sounds like sleeping, but mishanin is translated as being as analyzing, as learning in the sukkah. One is supposed to learn in the sukkah. So the Gemara asks, Eini v'hama rava mikro misna b'metathala. One is reading scripture, reading and learning mishnayos is done in the sukkah. Batanoi bar metathalata. But analyzing Torah is supposed to be done outside. So the Gemara answers, Lokasha, habi migras, habi yuni. Uses the same words. The one is referring to reviewing, and the other one is referring to analysis. The problem is, which one is which? It's a little bit ambiguous as to which one you're supposed to do in the sukkah versus which one you're supposed to do outside the sukkah. So Rashi seems to be following the more simple understanding of the Gemara, and the advantage of Rashi also is that the words match up to our Gemara. I mean, no one is going to argue that there's an issue in our Gemara which one is which, but Rashi says, yeah, you're allowed to learn regular, just to prepare the Daf Yomi Shir, or to learn Mishnayos, or to go over Chumash and Rashi. That one should go ahead and do in the Sukkah. But to go and be Ma'ayin, to go and work really hard in Torah, to do analytical analysis, things like that, so that a person doesn't have to do in the Sukkah. Why wouldn't you have to do that in the Sukkah? So, so why wouldn't one have to do that in sukkah? So the suggestion could only be is that you'd learn better not in the sukkah. That it's going to that it's hard work and the weather is not so great in the sukkah. The air conditioning is not always on or the heat's not always on. And so to relax and just read Torah, that's okay. But to be ma'ayin, that you should set up a more comfortable environment.
Is that true? Is that what they say? Because it's not comfortable.
And that seems to be what Rashi's shot is. Yeah. So the other Rishonim actually give the opposite opinion, that the Ritva and the Ran, there's a Ran say, no, the opposite. So just to sit and learn, just to sit and read, that you can do outside the sukkah. The to be ma'ayin, that you do in the sukkah. Why? What's their reasoning? Because to be ma'ayin, to work really hard, that requires you to sit down and not to move for a while. So guess what you're doing when you're sitting down and not moving for a while? You're being koveya makom, right? You're having, it's like having a permanent meal. Just like by eating, there's distinctions between what you have to do in the sukkah versus what perhaps you could do outside the sukkah. So learning as well, there could be distinctions. And therefore, those Rishonim actually give the opposite understanding. Their understanding is that what does one do in the sukkah? One has to do in the sukkah their learning, their intense learning, but the easier learning, one is permitted to do outside.
But even Rashi said the easier learning, what does he say if you do the more intense learning? I mean, it's not available.
No, you're not required. You get into that issue in general when you learn sukkah. That is an obligation to eat in the sukkah. So what does it mean if you don't do it? Right, you've been like what we call being mevatel an aseh. You didn't fulfill the mitzvah, or maybe there's even an iser aseh. There's a violation of that. Right, it's all how to understand once you assume that there's an obligation, what is the repercussions if you don't do it? Right, that's an issue within Masechta Sukkah. So the Shulchan Aruch actually paskins like Rashi, just straight out like Rashi. It doesn't quote the other Rishonim. He says that when learning on Sukkot, one should learn easier reading things one would learn in the sukkah, and the more ma'ayin things one would be able to do outside. Right? He says, "Kol shivas yom kori b'toch sukkah v'chasha meivin umedaktik v'meshi yikare yachdu lomot chutz misukkah." Why? Because he should tehei daitum yishav asalas. That he'll be able to be more at ease. He'll be able to have his mind more focused if he doesn't learn in the sukkah. I give you, it might not necessarily be because of the weather, right? Just be because when at Sukkot you have a one-room house all of a sudden, right? And everyone's in the sukkah, and this kid's coming in and doing their art project, and this kid's coming in and having their donut, and this kid's coming, right? So if one actually has to focus, so then that might be a different reason why a person might leave the sukkah in order to go to a more quiet place. But the Shulchan Aruch Paskin straight out like Rashi. The Mishnah Berurah says, well, we have one Rishonim saying, one set of Rishonim saying this, and one set of Rishonim saying that. Well, Suffolk Daraisa L'Chumra, so therefore we're going to have to do everything in the sukkah. However, the Mishnah Berurah then jumps in and says, but if being ma'ayin means you're going to need a lot of svarim, and your library is not so close to the sukkah that you're going to have to spend your entire day schlepping back and forth, bringing the svarim back and forth, so then perhaps one has the right to be makil. So Rav Shmuel here in the Hilchot, in his Kovetz Halachos, well, not his sefer, the sefer that was written about his psukim, Kovetz Halachos and Hilchot Sukkah, so he points out that the Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Berurah itself says that, but if, let's say you have a lot of svarim that you're going to eat over Sukkot, but you can bring them all in before Sukkot. So guess what? That's part of your preparations for Sukkah. Meaning to the pain in the neck might be to run back and forth during Sukkot. But if you know what you're going to need on Sukkot and you could place them within the close proximity of the sukkah, so you should do that. That's part of your preparations for sukkah. Sukkah, that's what the Mishnah Berurah points out. So Shmuel says, yeah, that you should go ahead and do this, and he doesn't allow, even really permit the cool of the Mishnah Berurah that running around on sukkah is a problem, because the Aruch HaShulchan doesn't pass in that way. The Aruch HaShulchan passes from Sarach Harbi Sarim Nundo Yitlam Nusukkah Vaf Pisha Zeu Alav Toreach Bikol Makam Lo Bishvil Zeh Yachul Liftar Atma Musukkah. Just because it's a Tircha doesn't mean you get exempted from a Sukkah. Right? Alright, so it's hard work, so go ahead and do it. Alright, so one, that's, keep that in mind once Sukkot comes around. Okay, I want to do a little bit about the second pshat in Rashi. What was the second pshat that Rashi gave as to what Yosef was warning the brothers not to do on the way home? So Yosef was warning the brothers, right, al tifsu psiagasa, that you're not supposed to take large strides. So why should you take large strides? So the Gemara says the Amar Mar, a large stride takes away 1/500th of a person's eyes. Period. That's what the Gemara. That's what the Gemara says. You know, that's just what happens. You lose 1/500th of your eyes. So, anyone have a problem with that?
Eyesight.
Your eyesight. Yeah, 1/500th of the power of your eyesight, you're going to lose. So, anyone have a problem with that?
It makes no sense.
Why does it make no sense?
Because you have long strides. How does that affect your
eyesight? If you take long strides,
how does that affect your eyesight? Keep your eyes closed. I mean.
All right. Well, maybe it does. Theoretically, it does. But a stronger question.
Permanently affect your eyesight, and as you're walking too fast, you're not noticing.
No, the assumption is that permanently that's
but you're wearing contacts.
Tosfos asks, but we see it's not true. Tosfos asks, what do you mean? I know people that take long strides and they don't lose their eyesight. So why isn't it true? So Tosfos gives three answers to that kasha. Tosfos says, number one, he says, well, maybe it just means that you lose 1/500th of whatever amount of eyesight you have left. Right, so you have you lose 1/500, and you lose another 1/500. What's left? So you're not necessarily going to notice it. Tosfos then goes on and says, but that doesn't really make sense. Why should that make a difference? That's your question. Why should that matter? Once you assume that you're losing 1/500, so why should it be different based on how much you have left? So those gives another two answers. He says, well, the first one is worse because once you, it's usually just lose it at the first stride. Unless the first stride is once you violated it. And the second one is, he says that kolat kashos, and the first stride is what makes things worse than the other strides. Hey, whatever those answers of Tosfos are, so Tosfos has that idea that it does happen, but perhaps it's not as bad as the Gemara would lead one to believe. Now, what's interesting here is that the Gemara here doesn't quote what the antidote is. There is a Gemara in Brachos that quotes the same idea, and it says these are the list of things a person shouldn't do. They shouldn't walk walk totally straight. I always used to quote that Gemara to my mother. You don't have to walk totally straight. There's a couple of things having to do with midos and the way a person should comport themselves. So one of the things on that list is you shouldn't take long strides. So the Gemara says, and what if you do? So be machmed on Kiddush and you'll get your eyesight back. That's what Gemara says. B'machban hakidush, and you're going to get your eyesight back. So the impression that one gets from that Gemara is something having to do with kiddush on Friday night, that one is going to be strict. So let's cover both of those issues. What's the issue with the Psiya Gasa? So that is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, not necessarily in Shulchan Aruch itself, but in the Mishnah Berurah. Shulchan Aruch, in the beginning of Simon Shin Aleph. So Shin Aleph is actually the halachos having to do with Muksa, but it starts by saying Muksa is learned out as what is probably because Shabbos is supposed to be different than the rest of the week. So the first sif in Simon Nun Aleph, which is one of the longest simanim, one of the longest chapters in all of Shulchan Aruch of Shabbos, says Ein Laretz B'Shabbos. That's supposed to run on Shabbos. Eliyim Kain Hula Davar Mitzvah. This is for Davar Mitzvah, Pesach Nesas Ochiyosiba, like going to Shul, or something like that. So one is not supposed to run on Shabbos. So the Mishnah Berurah says, well, he says, Yashinem Marvachem Baratomi Asos Terachecha, Vidarshusha Lo Yehehi Luchach B'Shabbos Ki Luchach B'Chol. That your walking during Shabbos shouldn't be the same as during the week. So Shederach Adam Lamaher V'Laritz Acharaska, because during the week a person goes around and runs. V'Af B'Chol, Ein Lipsoa P'Siya Gasa. And even during the week, you're not really supposed to take long steps. The Taz Echem Mi Tuf Kuf Mi Mor Einav. Because taking long steps will take get rid of 1/5 of your eyesight. El D'B'Shabbos Ikanami Isur. But rather, Shabbos, there is an additional violation because of this idea. So that's one perspective. What's the difference between Shabbos and during the week? There's an additional idea that Shabbos, they just have to be more careful on Shabbos and during the week. But still, there should be a distinction then. So some point out, I think Rav Moshe has this, points out that, well, there's different ways of walking fast. Right, the Psiya Gasa's long strides, and I think the Rishonim learned out that's longer than an amma. That your regular stride is an amma. You're supposed to take longer strides than amma. It doesn't say how fast you're allowed to do it or how slow you're supposed to do it. Shabbos either means do it slower, or even take smaller strides, even take long, right, walk like kind of half steps than one does during the week. So In my life, I recall one person clearly being machmer on this. I have a cousin in Israel, Rav Moshe Kleinman, who was the Mashgiach of Yeshiva Teres HaTorah. He's no longer there, he's now someplace else. But he lived in Beit Vegan, about 2 blocks away from the yeshiva. So I went to his house and for Shabbos. And I remember we davened Friday night in the yeshiva, and it took us about 40 minutes to walk the 2 blocks to his house. Right, he walked very, very slowly, and every single person that we passed on the street, this is in Beit Vegan, right, and everyone's walking over, every person he stopped, he was walking, he'd stop, and, you know, turn towards them and say, Good Shabbos! And they would respond. And it took about 40 minutes to get home. Now, one can make a case that, well, you're on your way to a Dvar Mitzvah, meaning you have Kiddush to do when you get home. You have a Suda to eat when you get home. Pretty much everything on Shabbos one can say is for a Dvar Mitzvah. I need to get home so that I can take my nap, right? You can make a case that a lot of things are Dvar Mitzvah, but yet this idea, right? We say it in Zbiras, Posim Bo Psiak Ketana, that we take smaller steps on Shabbos than we do during the week. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. However, even during the week, perhaps one shouldn't be taking such long strides, but at least there should be some distinction between what one does on Shabbos during the week. But getting back to the antidote, so the Gemara says that something having to do with Kiddush is an antidote. So the Darkei Moshe quotes from the Maharshal that, oh, I'll tell you what the antidote is. It does have to do with Kiddush, but not drinking the wine. There is, by the way, the idea of taking, maybe some have seen this, that they take the Havdalah wine and put it under one's eyes. You ever seen that? Have you ever seen that before?
Yeah.
Right, so that's possibly based on this Gemara also. All right, the pockets is for Parnassa, and your eyes is for your eyesight. But in the page of the Shulchan Aruch itself, in the Mechaber, in the Ramah, so it quotes this idea, it quotes from the Maharil, the following idea, that when you make Kiddush, talks about whether you stand or whether you should sit. This is Simon Reish Ayin Aleph Sif Yud. It says V'cheshem Maschil Yitan Einav B'Neros. That when you begin saying Kiddush, you should take a look at the Neros. What in the world do the Neros have to do with the eyesight? So the Maharil says that Ner. What's the gematria of Ner? Nun Reish. Anyone?
One is 50
and Reish is 200. 250. How many candles do you have? 500. So that's the simon, that that the 500 of the neiros is the antidote to the 1/500th of the eyesight that one loses. So it is in Shulchan Aruch. It's mentioned in the Ramah that one should take a look at the neiros in the beginning of Kiddush. It's a little bit unclear how much, because it sounds like from the Shulchan Aruch itself that you, for the entire first paragraph of you're supposed to look at, but there's an issue that you're supposed to look at the wine when you make Kiddush. That's another idea. One's supposed to look and see their reflection in the wine at some point during Kiddush. So I think the psak generally is to take a look at the neiros in the beginning as one's about to start Kiddush, and then one can take a look at their wine at some point during the duration of Kiddush. There is, I don't know if my gold is here or not, but there is one more. I came across the following question, and that is the Gemara in Maseches Tainus is a little bit odd, because the Gemara, the top of Daf Yud Amud Beis, discusses this idea that Yosef sent his brothers down, that Yaakov sent his brothers down even though they had enough food. He told them you should go down anyways, but it doesn't look right that you're eating and everybody else is, so therefore it's not appropriate to be conspicuous while everybody else is suffering. Then it tells this story about Yosef giving instructions to his brother, and then the Gemara flips back to the previous sugya of don't look conspicuous while other people are suffering. In fact, we did this sugya a little while back. That's the sugya of not having marital relations. Also learned out from Bereishis, when it says that Yosef had Ephraim and Menashe before the years of famine started. So the Gemara comments, and Rashi comments, and there the Gemara comments, because one isn't supposed to have marital relations while the rest of the world is suffering. Right? So what is this? This seems to be a little bit out of place. The instructions that Yosef gave back to his brothers. So I came across on the Daf Online website. So he points out a few other difficulties here. He says, first of all, if it was so important, these instructions about traveling, why did Yaakov give the instructions to the brothers? I mean, why is it they've gone back and forth to Mitzrayim and back three times already? They've already taken three trips. So why is it only on the fourth trip that Yosef gives them the instructions? Oh, by the way, don't get agitated along the way. Also, why is it the fourth time? B, why did Yaakov give them the instructions? And also, if they're going to, if the brothers travel to Mitzrayim in order to buy food, in order to bring back to Israel during the famine, they're doing a mitzvah. So in that case, they should be exempt from the danger anyways. So he explains that the third time when they were going back, they were not involved in the mitzvah. That the first time they had the mitzvah of, well, we have to go get food, bring it back and forth in order to either not to look conspicuous or to get food. What mitzvah are they doing at this point in order to go back to Yaakov? Now, one could make the case that the mitzvah of Kivud Avein, going back to help their father and to bring him back to Egypt and to tell them the good news, but at least that's his assumption, that it's only this fourth time that their dafka is not a mitzvah going on. The first couple of times when they're going down from Egypt, they're following the words of the father. Now, they're not following the words of the father. Now, they're just doing what Yosef told them to do, and because it's only what Yosef told them to do, therefore the issue of Altir Gezubadar are then going to come back into play. But they're following the instructions that Yosef gives. So with that, he goes and makes the following very interesting insight into the pasuk that we were quoting. To take a look back at the pasuk again, Perek Mem Hei, Pasuk Chaf Dalet, 45:24. So the pasuk seems to be out of order. What does the pasuk say? Vayishlach es Yaakov v'etzachav v'elechu. He sent his brothers and they went. And then he said to them, "Al tirgzu badar." What's the problem, Bruce?
That they went before he told them.
They're already gone. Right, they're already gone.
Called after them.
Oh, sorry. So he called after them. Oh, you should tell them before they left. What's going on here? Why does the pasuk seem to be out of order? So he says that if you also think about it, right, we covered this as well. Yosef gives them instructions, specific instructions, to tell their father, "I'm Yosef. I'm alive in Mitzrayim. Everything that happened to me to bring me down here was for the best, and it was Hashem's plan. And you should come down to Mitzrayim." Did the brothers actually go back and tell Yaakov that? No. They came back and told him, "Yosef's still alive." And Yaakov says, "Ah, Yosef's still alive. I must go down to Mitzrayim in order to see him." So says, so points at Rabbi, I think Kornbluth is his name, I forget, or he's quoting from Rav Yaakov Hamnik in Mar B'Shalom. So he points out that originally Yosef gives them instructions to do what? To be Mekadei Hashem Shemayim. Right, to go back and tell Yaakov, Yosef is alive, and Hashem manipulated everything in order to make sure that he's in charge. But then he realizes, I'm not sure how he realized, but he realizes that the brothers aren't planning on doing that. The brothers are just going to go and tell him that Yosef is still alive. How did he end up there? Oh! Right? And they weren't going to be Mekadei Hashem Shemayim. So originally he sent them having in mind that they're going to do a mitzvah. Therefore the idea of Al Tirgazu B'Derech isn't going to apply because they're doing a mitzvah anyways. But once Yosef realized that they're not going to do that mitzvah as he laid out, so then the requirement of Al Tirgazu B'Derech doesn't come back into play, and you have to be careful. Don't get too involved in learning on the way, because you're going to get lost, and don't take too long strides, because you're going to ruin your eyesight, right? And all the things come back into play. Okay. So, two issues on that Rashi, they all play out halacha l'maaseh. It's not fair.